This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's going to be having a good Saturday. We want to try to have 3 hours of fun here talking about all the things going on because there is a lot. Mariners make a trade. Mariners win. James Paxton strikes out 11. All those things. And, of course, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get started with headlines. All right, so Mariners last night win the game 2-1 against the Minnesota Twins. James Paxton pitched, only gave up 3 hits, struck out 11. His earned run average now is down to 3.10. Then, of course, they make a trade. I mean, they take one of their best young pitchers, Andrew Moore, ship him out with another relief pitcher, Tommy Romero, and they were picking up Alex Colome from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, their closer. Also pick up an outfielder in Denard Span, and so now they filled the two needs that they have because they were short in the bullpen. Colome is now going to be the setup guy in the eighth inning. Has about a 94.6-mile-an-hour fastball, so has 11 saves so far this year. So now they have spent almost, well, I think, what, about 10 of the $11 million they save from the Robinson Cano suspension. So they were able to do that. It did cost them a couple pitching prospects, but hey, the idea is to try to win now. Series continues against the Twins tonight at 7:10 with pregame at 6. In the NBA, the Cavaliers, even though, again, LeBron James all banged up, I mean, he's given everything he can. They win 109-99, and now that means Game 7. It's, boy, a great weekend because tonight it'll be Game 7 with, well, at least with Golden, Game 6 with Golden State coming back and trying to see how they can do their one game from elimination. And, of course, the Cavs now look forcing Game 7 coming up tomorrow. So a lot going on there. Mercedes Lewis ends up signing a deal with the tight end, of course, with the Green Bay Packers. That done yesterday. So now they've added Jimmy Graham and Mercedes Lewis. So that's two pretty good targets right now for Aaron Rodgers. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton. How you doing this fine Saturday morning?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Oh, can't complain, man. Up and about. That's all that matters. Hey, you're talking about a couple of things. Let's get right back to some of those rule changes in NFL.
Yeah.
The rule specifically that kind of bothers me is the one with the offensive lineman cannot engage with the defensive player until he picks his head up.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Clayton, if I'm a one gap penetrator,
right,
I'm coming right at you in that gap, and I'm gonna keep my head down. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, well, theoretically, the idea is that they're going to try to do it so that, I mean, I think it may not be as bad because you have to try to initiate contact almost with intent. And so, you know, the lowering the helmet, again, the way they explained it at the owners' meeting back in the spring, I'd say what, back in March, really confused people because lower your head, make contact, you get penalty. And that would be just ridiculous. But I know that, and, you know, you can listen to Al Riveron on Schooled with a Professor. He's a supervisor of officials. He's the one that kind of gives a little bit more of an explanation. And again, all positions are affected, but if they're just offensive linemen doing their job, I don't think they're going to get penalized. I would hope not, because again, if so, you're going to almost have a penalty on every play.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, if you're down at the goal line, you're trying to root that defensive tackle out of there, the lower man wins. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have his head up when he's doing that.
Right.
You know? Yeah, I mean, It pretty much sounds like, you know, I understand they're trying to take the head out of the game, which I don't know how you can take the head of a person's body and take it off and take it out of the game.
Right.
If I was a defensive coordinator, I'd just one gap penetrate you all day.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
No, this is going to be problematic.
I just one gap penetrate you all day. If you can't touch me without my head up, I'm coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do you think they over-legislate the game?
I do, yeah.
Too much?
Well, they over-legislate, and they also try to put words to make it on action. And I think that's where their problem is, because they try to explain it in a nice little package of words, and that just confuses things. It was like the same thing with the catch rule, because they kept on adding things. It's like, okay, a hand, you catch it, you have your feet on the ground, and then they start adding and then they came up with all kind of crazy stuff that made it more difficult to be able to figure out what it's going to be. And we'll see how it's going to go now. But, in this case, I think that they do create the potential of confusion by, the way that they say it. It just, I think it's very problematic.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at it from that standpoint of view, as soon as that ball is hiked, I mean, how are you going to delegate that?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a split second.
Right.
And contact is initiated in a split second as soon as the ball is hiked. I just don't understand how they're going to delegate that. It just and the goal line is just unbelievable. I would just hold up and see what happens when a game starts and see how the refs will react to that, because I think you're putting the refs in such a tough position to delegate a football game now with all these rules and regulations that you're implementing. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're going to need help from New York City to try to get that done.
Agreed.
Especially in a game, you're going to definitely need help. But let's talk a little bit. Let's talk about the game itself of football. All right, we talked about the AFC East last week. What about the AFC South, Mr. Clayton? Is that just Jacksonville's division?
Right now, I'd say so. I mean, they've got so many good players on defense, and there's certainly enough there on offense. Although, here's where I think they take a step back, because they lost two of their best three receivers. Arguably, you could say they've lost their best two receivers. Allen Robinson went to Chicago. Allen Hurns was cut, and now he's over with the Dallas Cowboys. And so, all of a sudden, Marquise Lee, who was a second-round pick, is pretty much their main receiving threat. And so with a quarterback that struggles like Blake Bortles, I think, and again, when you shake up a receiving core, we've watched it in Cincinnati. We'll watch it this year in Dallas. We watched it last year in Washington. When you shake up a receiving core like that and take away two key elements, a lot of times you take a step back. That's where I do think that they have a chance of taking a step back.
And then you just announced today that what you announced, that I heard that during the week, that Mercedes Lewis just signed with the Green Bay Packers, taking that tight end out of the equation, which I know they have other good, pretty decent tight ends on that team, but taking him out of the equation, especially a veteran, it definitely, Blake Bortles, I mean, the running game is solid. The defense is solid. Well, you know what I think about that AFC South? I tell you, Deshaun Watson stays healthy.
Right.
There could be some trouble over there.
There could be. I mean, what you're looking at, and we don't know where Indianapolis is. I mean, anticipating that Andrew Luck is going to play, but they're so void of talent on defense, that's going to hold against them. But I think you look at, with Tennessee, that's the division, I think, that's like the NFC South a couple years ago. It could really, really do well.
Yes. Now, you see, when it comes to Tennessee, I don't know how Mike Vrabel's coaching technique is going to be. I suppose he's going to come with the 3-4 defense.
Mm-hmm.
He's gonna have this ability to run the football and what have you. Does Marcus Mariota fit what Mike Vrabel and those guys are going to be trying to do over there in Tennessee?
Good question, because, again, the job was open mainly because of the fact that Mike Mularkey didn't get more out of Mark. I mean, how about that? They make the playoffs, they win a playoff game, and yet that wasn't good enough. Mularkey ends up losing the job, and so much of it was because of the offense. And now here comes a defensive coach in to try to fix that up. Can he do it? Good question.
That is a good question. I mean, I thought Mike Mularkey did a pretty admirable job of what he was working with.
Mm-hmm.
I thought their defense was pretty good. The running game was coming around real good until Murray got hurt. But Henry really came on pretty good and played and ran the ball real well for him. I mean, losing to the New England Patriots is not a bad thing, but that remains to be seen as well. Indianapolis, Mr. Clayton, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't see them doing too much. They got a new coach with Frank Wright, love the guy. Kind of don't like the guy because you remember when he did to the Houston Oilers back in the day, kind of hurt him, Mr. Clayton. That was my second team when I was a kid, was the Oilers.
Mm-hmm,
That was with Warren Moon. But Frank Wright coming as an offensive-minded coach, did they do enough on the offensive line if Andrew Luck comes back? And also, I like Jacoby Brissett. I think Jacoby Brissett could be a starting quarterback on some football teams in the league. What do you think?
I think he's tough. I know that. I don't know if he, I mean, listen, if he starts, I just think he's more of a backup, but he does have starting ability, and he's certainly one of the tougher quarterbacks you're going to see. I give him definite credit for that.
Yeah, yeah. And so I don't see them. I could see, you know, Houston is the one that intrigues me. You know, if Deshaun Watson stays healthy, and the defense, the way that their defense is, and I like their defense. You get J.J. Watt back along with the big guy on the other, opposite side of him. I mean, they've Whitney Merciless and all that. They've got some superior pass rush.
I agree.
Jadeveon Clowney was the guy I was thinking about.
Right.
But they got some superior pass rush over there. Now that's paramount in that division, as far as that's concerned. So it could come down between Jacksonville and Houston vying for the lead of that division.
Or I still don't think you can count out Tennessee. I mean, remember, they did make the playoffs last year, and they've had a pretty good offseason as far as acquisitions, particularly on defense at cornerback and all that. And so they're a dangerous team. They're not like an NFC team because, again, the AFC is, I think, so far down. It's a down conference right now.
Yeah, right now, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the AFC has some of the teams I look at in the AFC, particularly, we'll talk about the NFC North, which I think is a pretty intriguing situation right now over there with Pittsburgh and those boys. But when you look at the AFC South, Doug Marrone and Tom Coughlin makes it very interesting,
right?
In my opinion. I think they bring a brand of football. It's kind of like Bill Parcells-esque type football. It will compete anywhere you go, and it can win anywhere you go with it. You know, I think those guys there, those two guys there, I have a lot of respect for those two, for Coughlin and Marrone.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that they do a good job, and they certainly made a big impact working together, and they got the team where they're able to win. They made it easier for Blake Bortles. He actually did some good things last year where he was on the verge of almost not being there. So I think they did get some encouragement. Hey, JB, got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, have a good week, my friend.
Thank you so much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Raider Jim. Hey, Jim, how are you?
Good morning, John. How are you?
Real good.
Oh, good. Hey, John, have you ever been so frustrated sometimes when things come out about the NFL and, you know, there's really good reasonable reasons to do certain things, and yet the NFL owners don't do them? For instance, what happened with the whole national anthem thing and the requirements for everyone to either be out there and stand or be in the locker room.
Well, let's put it this way. I think a lot of people, you know, took the idea, it's like, well, this is a bad decision. And I think now you understand how bad of a decision it is, because, you know, I was encouraged when I was there on Tuesday night, and there were some people talking about the thought that, okay, maybe they'll just go back to the old way when you didn't have to have the players out there for the national anthem. That was prior to like 2009, 2010. Well, guess what? They didn't do that. And so they came up with a compromise, and really it's a compromise that didn't involve the players. It gets the players angry. It puts them in a position to having to, you know, make a judgment whether they want to be good guy or bad guy. And, you know, now you have no solid legislation because the teams can do whatever they want to the player afterwards. You give the teams the license to do it. And so I just think it's a mess. And they could have been worse. I mean, they could have gone with that 15-yard penalty, you know, for anybody out there and ordering everybody to be out there. That would have been a disaster. But again, they could make this an easy fix, and they didn't.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. I remember hearing the arguments about what you were talking about, you know, earlier in the week, not 2-3 weeks ago, about, you know, look, this doesn't need to take place. They don't have to stand. Let's just go back to the old situation and the old norm, and that would fix the problem. So when I hear these kinds of things, I think to myself, well, now they're going to put themselves in the position of quashing protest. And, you know, John, I don't know about you, but protest is not intended to be antiseptic.
Right.
It's intended to be something that makes people uncomfortable. And people need to, you know, and these players, it's nice to see that these players have a conscience. And, you know, thank God we have people like Doug Baldwin out there who are talking about reasonable measures and what this might mean to Black America and what this might mean to people of color and why this is important to take these stands sometimes in a modulated way, in an irrational way. And I just think as though it's the height of hubris what the NFL is trying to do here. They're trying to quash protests, and what they're going to end up doing is creating more.
Mm-hmm. Where, I mean, the NBA, I mean, they order all their players to stand, and if anybody does it, let me go back, and Chris Jackson a few years ago was suspended because he ended up, you know, going ahead and, you know, dishonoring and disrespecting the national anthem. And so but that's all collectively bargained. At least the players had a voice in it.
Right. Right. They didn't have, the players didn't have a voice in this issue, and I think they should have. I mean, the NFL, you know, you cannot be doing these things without bringing people to the table, at least giving them a preview of what might happen,
mm-hmm.
to create a little bit more buy-in. And they weren't at the table so that they could at least give a counterbalance to the argument of why the NFL owners wanted to do this. And I just think that's just unfortunate. And then comes out subsequently that, you know, Jed York and Mark Davis, among others, were basically abstaining because they felt uncomfortable as well about this.
Well, and that's the weird part, because you look at the fact that they didn't even vote on it. I mean, this was just all, it's like, okay, well, we can't get a complete agreement, so here's what we're going to do. It's like, oh, nice. Good luck on that one.
Right. So it leads me to, well, by the way, do you buy the argument that the ratings have gone down and that this is primarily the reason why? I think it's one data point among others as to the reasons why ratings have gone down, not entirely because of these protests. What do you think, John?
No, I mean, I think that, you know, ratings are going down because it's hard to figure out how to do the ratings. I think that's where the big issue is, because, you know, you've now got so many people that are now looking at it online.
Right.
They're in a different category as far as trying to, if you're looking on your iPhone, you're not necessarily registering in that. And, you know, it's put this way, revenues are up. So if things are so bad, how are revenues going up? So I don't buy the idea. Again, I think that they did suffer a little bit. I think there is a drain with some of the people, you know, that are now watching more of the Red Zone channel than the NFL. But I still think it's a very strong league.
I agree with you, and I think you make a good point. I mean, I think it's primarily because of overexposure on all of these different media platforms, and mm-hmm. They don't necessarily know how to measure where the eyeballs are going.
Right.
Yeah, I think that has a lot more to do with it than these protests. I just think that's a lame excuse, in my opinion, John.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And so I think the state of the game right now is still very good. I think that you can see interest. I think that you can see it's even going to get more popular now that the gambling has now been legalized. I think that's going to draw more interest. So, no, I think the league's still in a good state. But, again, they keep on stepping on their own foot with some of these decisions.
Indeed, indeed. John, do NFL teams have to disclose when their training camps will be held?
Yeah,
like the dates?
Eventually.
Is there a set time when they need to announce those things?
Not really. I mean, it'll be announced. I think as you get closer to the mini camp, everybody's going to announce it. You know, because technically, you can go to camp 15 days before the first preseason game. Yeah, that's,
okay.
Of course, the veterans. They can report 15 days before. You can maybe have a little bit of a rookie mini camp prior to that. But for veterans, so in other words, I think a lot of the camps are going to start July 26th. That's when you're going to see a lot.
Okay, that's good to know, because, you know, I call the Raiders mm-hmm. today when you have a training camp. And, of course, typical Raiders, they're not willing to disclose dates. Of course, they say it's not open to the public and blah,
right.
blah, blah. And I go, I know.
A surprise, huh?
Just give me the date started. So at least I have the 27th to go with. That's helpful, John. What did you think about the acquisition of the Raiders getting Hackenberg?
I think it's terrible. I think it's a waste of time.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, you know, Gruden's big on these reclamation projects.
I know.
He loves to acquire quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of the things he loves to do. I'm not saying it's a good thing. I just think that's what he does.
I know. But that's, I think, the scary part is that, okay, are we really going to succeed with these guys? I think he's just acquiring too much. Now, maybe you can't complain. I mean, that's certainly what happened the first year that Pete Carroll and John Steiner started out. They tried to acquire everything they possibly can. But I think that, Hackenberg is, John Gruden complains rightfully so. There's not enough time to be able to work with the players. Now, he's going to be able to turn Hackenberg around when nobody else could. I just don't buy it. Hey, Raider Jim, thank you for the phone call.
Okay, John, have a good day.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Mike in Federal Way. Hey, Mike.
Hey, good morning, John.
Good morning.
Hey, I'm going to kind of maybe change the tone here a little bit. Maybe we can talk a little bit of Husky football, if you wouldn't mind. I know you're I just want to get your opinion in terms of Chris Peterson and everything, and I tell you, I'm 55 years old and watching the Huskies since the 70s, and this is finally something that it just brings a joy to my heart, watching him just starting to play the type of football the Pacific Northwest is familiar with. We haven't had something like this with Don James, and I just want to get your opinion on a national level. How is Chris Peterson perceived, especially in terms of the kind of players he turns out, going back to Boise State? Because I tell you, each year he's just starting to recruit more kids, and, just looking online and in the papers, man. He just really got it dialed in right now.
Yeah, he really does. No, I agree, and I think he's starting to get recognized for it as one of the best coaches in college football. I think you can see it from the recruiting standpoint, maybe because he's on the West Coast and the Pac-12 didn't get the respect last year that probably, I don't know if it deserved, because it was not a great Pac-12 year. Maybe that's not giving him the chance. But no, I think he's being recognized as one of the best coaches in college football. And if not, it's like, he took a team that was a surprise team and got it into the Final Four. That was encouraging. And of course, you can see each year he gets stronger and stronger recruiting. Maybe the fact that he's a little media shy works against him, but not to a major degree. I just think the guy is a great coach, but I think everybody kind of realizes that now.
Yeah, they just, I think, now that they got, they bumped up the D.C. coordinator over to Kowski, which that was his move. I forget the guy's name, but Jimmy Lake is now the D.C., and he's probably a couple of years away from getting a head coaching job. But I'll take this one off the air, too. If Jake had the year that he had 2 years ago, and I know it's hard to project, what kind of NFL quarterback you think he'll be?
I think right now he's going to be a third day type of quarterback. I mean, fifth, sixth, seventh round based on what we have, because I know some of the ratings really went down on him. If he has a good year, then maybe he can get it back into the fourth or fifth round. But I think right now he's looking to be third day. Hey, thank you for the phone call. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. We'll chat with John Boyle from Seahawks.com. Next, it's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is John Boyle from Seahawks.com. And so you've been watching the quiet stuff, or the private stuff over there, because you're there every day. We had a chance Thursday to be able to take a look at the team. And, it is a different type of vibe. I guess Doug Baldwin brought it out. It's a much quieter type of practice, even though it's still equally competitive.
Yeah, I mean, it's different. And I thought it was interesting when Doug Baldwin was talking about, they don't know yet what the personality and kind of how this team is going to be, because there is a lot of newness, especially when you talk about those veteran defensive guys. Two of the biggest voices in the past were Michael Bennett and Richard Sherman. So, this team is still kind of finding that identity, and that's kind of the value and the importance of this offseason. I talked to KJ Wright the other day about this, and more than anything going on the field, it's probably the biggest thing for them right now is just sort of figuring out that cohesiveness.
No question. And it's almost, again, it's like 2011, because that's when some of the players started getting the opportunity, like Richard Sherman, to go ahead and start to play. And and that's where the personality started to establish itself.
Exactly. And that's kind of the comparison. We've heard John Schneider make that comparison this offseason, is they want that next generation of young guys to step up and be ready to compete and win those big roles and sort of emerge as you know, as they've always pointed out, nobody really knew who Cam Chancellor was before he went, you know, became a starter in 2011. And, you know, they're not saying necessarily that a young guy like, say, Delano Hill was going to be Cam Chancellor, but they want some young guys to be ready to step up, win starting jobs, and sort of set the tone for this next run for this defense. And then, you know, the good thing is you still have some really quality veterans leading the way to kind of help bring those guys along, such as a Bobby Wagner or KJ Wright.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, the interesting part. Let's kind of break down some of the things that we were able to see. The receiver position is very interesting. I thought, you know, Jaren Brown looks like he's a, you know, bigger body type of guy. Not the biggest guy, but, you know, a 6'2 guy. Looks like he can have some good deep speed. Marcus Johnson does indeed look fast. Amara Darbo, you know, is one that's going to be challenged certainly by Brown in that. And then David Moore gets a lot of good reviews. What do you see about some of the young receivers?
Yeah, I mean, I see a pretty wide open competition, really. You know, we all know Doug Baldwin and Tyler Lockett are going to be big parts of that receiving game. But beyond that, there's, you know, it's for that third, fourth spot of, you know, earning real playing time. There's no real consensus on who it's going to be right now. You know, I think they'd love to see Darbo make a leap and kind of be that guy that they thought they were getting when they used a third round pick on him. But he's obviously going to have to earn it. And, you know, you kind of mentioned all those guys that are all looking good. And then, you know, they do like the size of a guy like Brown. That's also why they went out and signed DeMarge Stringfellow after the mini camp. So, you know, you get some guys with a little size, which is an element they don't have necessarily in the other guys. So, yeah, it's way too early to get a read on who's going to emerge, but that's going to be a real fun competition to watch.
No question. I was quite impressed again by Alex Magoo because again he was throwing into tight windows. He's creative. He'll flip the ball when somebody's pressuring him and get it to a running back or a wide receiver or a tight end. I mean, has he been as consistently good as we saw in the mini camp on Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I any rookie's going to have some inconsistencies. So it's hard to say for sure, but he, you know, he has looked really good. And we heard all about the mini camp and Pete was just raving about him. And, it's way too early to call, but I think he's got a real shot to win that backup job. He's going to have to earn it. And there's, you know, more experienced guy like Austin Davis ahead of him who knows the offense, knows the coordinator and all that. But, yeah, I mean, it's the talent's there. You know, they talked about his ability to throw on the move and we've seen that. So, he's got a long way to go still to show it. And it'll be really interesting to see in, you know, the preseason when it is a little more real. But, yeah, it's been impressive so far to see a seventh-round pick do what he's doing.
No, you know, no doubt. Because, again, I have been really impressed with him. Chris Carson looked really good the other day. And C.J. Procise looks like he's got a little bit of a new body from what he's changed around. Talk about what you've seen from those two guys.
Yeah, I mean, that group is going to be, you know, this is a big if, but if everybody can stay healthy, that's going to be a really competitive position all of a sudden. You know, the last 2 years, really 3 years going back to Marshawn Lynch's injury, it's been hard to stay healthy at that position. So we've never seen them at their best, but with everybody out there right now, it's a really good looking group. I mean, Chris Carson came back from that ankle injury. He's looking big and strong and fast. And it just, you know, as much as, you know, we all know Penny's a first round pick and is an impressive guy, he's not just going to come in and be handed anything. So, you know, Procise, as you mentioned, he looks a little different. Looks like he got a little thicker, and he's obviously got a lot to prove. He's missed a ton of games the last 2 years, but we saw in little glimpses the talent when he was on the field. So if, you know, they can go into the preseason with all those guys healthy, it's going to be a great competition.
No question. And I thought last year, and of course it didn't prove out on the field, that was a very talented group of running backs. I mean, so talented that Alex Smith, I thought, was the fifth best running back in camp and wasn't going to make the team. He doesn't make the team, and he goes over and has one of the better seasons for running backs going over to Baltimore. So, again, the talent, I think, is there. It's a matter of the execution.
Exactly. I really don't think the talent of that position group has been from the last couple of years. It's just, it's been health, and, you know, they know that, and that's part of the reason they keep adding depth to it, even when they have guys they like. And, you know, if some injuries do crop up, maybe one guy just emerges sort of by default. But I think that's why they like having so much talent there, is they feel good about any of those guys. But what's going to be fun is if everybody actually can be healthy, then it's going to be some real tough decisions. You know, luckily that position, you can get more than one guy on the field throughout a game and have a lot of guys contribute. But if everybody's healthy going into the season, they're going to have some tough choices.
On defense, what did you see at the cornerback position that you liked?
You know, obviously, well, it's been made of Shaquille Griffin playing maybe on the left side, and that would make a lot of sense down the road. But, you know, we don't know for sure if that's going to stick or not. Pete was kind of coy about that on purpose, I'm sure. So, but that makes sense. I mean, he's your best corner at this point, and going forward, it makes sense to have him on that side of the field. So if we see that, then we got, you know, wide open competition on the other side. I think, you know, Byron Maxwell, given his experience and how he played last year, you would think he's kind of the leader in the clubhouse right now, but there's a lot of talented guys at that position group and, you know, guys who are battling for it. You got, you know, one former starter coming over from San Francisco. I really like Nico Thorpe in the tiny amount we've seen to him at cornerback. You know, he's known as a special teams guy, but he's got, we've seen that position in particular, whether it was a Richard Sherman, Byron Maxwell, Deshaun Shedd, it's a lot of guys have kind of gone from being good special teams players to eventually being good cornerbacks. So, you know, he's a guy that will be in the competition. And then long-term, you know, let's see the development of Trey Flowers. It's nice they have some guys with starting experience, so you don't have to force Flowers to play right away if he's not ready, but he sure looks the part and he's a great athlete. So that could be a really fun one to watch as he develops.
I guess one thing that was kind of noticeable when they didn't have Frank Clark there because he considered it voluntary and didn't show up, and I'm sure it's a contract type of thing, but you know, with Deion Jordan not practicing on Thursday, I mean, they had Brandon Jackson and Jacob Martin out there showing you it's like, okay, they're you know, a little thin still maybe at the pass rushing, although, you know, they still have other options there that they can use, but that's still an area that they might need to bulk up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's a, you know, with you lose Michael Bennett and Cliff Averill, obviously depth is kind of a concern there, and that's why we've seen them, you know, they drafted Rasheem Green, they, you know, they signed some guys undrafted free agents, so going to just be interesting to see that position group as it develops. I think they still feel really good about, you mentioned Clark and Deion Jordan, and those guys weren't on the field on Thursday, but, you know, as you project down the road, they look like they could be important players, but yeah, I mean, that's until they go out and prove it in games. When you lose both starting ends, that's going to be a question going into the season.
No question. And I saw some quickness out of Arkevious Mingo at the outside linebacker position.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great athlete. He was a first-round pick for a reason. And I think, you know, that, again, like we've been saying about other positions, there's going to be competition there, and he's got to prove it. But they really see him kind of fitting into that Bruce Irvin type role where he can be a base strong side linebacker, but then, you know, probably even more valuable is come in and help in that nickel pass rush. If you want to kick a defensive end inside and put him on the edge, he could be a real good edge rusher with that speed.
No question. And then, of course, it's safety. It was good talking to Bradley McDougal the other day because, you know, it was like he wanted to get some work at free safety. He realizes he's going to be the starting strong safety once Earl Thomas gets back, and he seems to be optimistic that Thomas will be there, probably for the minicamp.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, McDougal's he's a fun one to watch. He was a guy that they went out and got. They saw value in him. Just kind of the market wasn't there last year in free agency, and they got him, and he proved to be a really important player, started 9 games, played both positions. And, you know, I think that he's a guy that could really be a difference maker in that, on the back end of that defense, really at either position. But as you said, it seems like his best fit right now is strong side or strong safety, at least until we get some clarity on Cam Chancellor.
Mm-hmm. What did you see from Ed Dixon? Because this was the first chance we had a chance to look at him, considered to be one of the best blocking tight ends, the best blocking tight end in free agency this year. He's a little taller and maybe thinner than I thought, but what did you see from him?
You know, you obviously don't see the blocking in these mini camps. It's, you know, no pads, and they're not really doing any physical contact. So, as you mentioned, that's kind of one of the things he's known best for, and that's something that the Seahawks really want with trying to get a run game going. But he, you know, I saw some pretty good hands too. You know, he made some nice catches, and, you know, if you look at last year when Greg Olsen got hurt and he was playing more, he was putting up some good numbers and had a really high yard per catch average. So as much as they're going to expect him to come in and block, he looks like a guy who can make a difference in the passing game as well.
Mm-hmm. No, and I thought that you know, Will Disley did some good things, and over, I guess one of the biggest things that was so noticeable was how good Russell Wilson looks.
Yeah, and, you know, they've talked so much this offseason about, you know, bringing Schottenheimer in. A lot of that was about Russell Wilson, and they want to push him a little bit because as great as he's been, sometimes last year we saw a little bit of, you know, some inconsistency within game. You know, he'd start slow, finish really well, things like that. So they really want to get him to be at his best because, you know, as everyone who watches football knows, that is the guy on the field that can make the biggest difference. So if they can maximize Russell Wilson, then this team can go somewhere on offense. So, yeah, and you know, just physically he looks different too. He looks like he's really came in, maybe slimmed down a little bit and in good shape. So, you know, obviously the expectations are high for him and they're going to need a big season.
No question. And, of course, read John Boyle at Seahawks.com. John, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
I'll see you on Tuesday. Okay. And, of course, they have an open session on Tuesday, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Hey, Tara, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Real good. Hope you have a good Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, I did. I heard you interview Pete Carroll during the training combine, and he was playing the piano at mm-hmm. the start of the show. What makes him differ from other coaches that you've interviewed?
Well, he's just so motivational. I mean, he's so upbeat, so positive, and sometimes you don't appreciate some of the talents that he has. I mean, because I know that the piano was right there at the owners' meeting, and so we were right there trying to get away from, you know, some of the noise coming out of some press conferences and that. And so here he was starting to play the piano. I know he's big into the music that I like, and you know he's also big into music. But what you like about Pete is that when he came out of two stops, you know, the Patriots and the Jets, he reinvented himself. He went to USC. He took the things that he's learned all through coaching and basically did it his way. It was like, hey, I'm going to do this my way here at USC. I'm going to recruit. I'm going to run the football. I'm going to get good defense. And you can see he established himself as one of the better college coaches in his generation. Now he comes into the NFL using the same principles, but I think you can see he's fun. He makes things entertaining. And I think that he has great ways to motivate the players.
Yeah, and all the talk about his message getting old to the Michael Bennett's or Richard Sherman's, I think that you can't complicate your message that much because there's free agents coming in and there's rookies coming in, and that's a really tough jump for a rookie that might be starting in mm-hmm. from college.
Yeah, and I think what ends up happening, and it happens on a lot of teams, you know, if you there, and that's why there's always that theory and that conversation that if you stay anywhere coaching in the NFL more than 10 years, it's tough because your message does get down. That's why this what's happened, and I'm sure that, you know, you can see Cliff Averill now has said it. You know, Richard Sherman, Michael Bennett, you know, they kind of jumped off board, and that's just when you're at some place for 6, 7, 8 years, you know, the message tends to get down a little bit. So, you know, you either have to readjust yourself if you're the player, or you have to get new players. And so now they're in a stage where they're getting new players, and I think that I mean, you can see from practice that they're off to a good start as far as trying to you know, get everything together as far as, you know, figuring out who the new leaders on the team. But, you know, there's a certain run that you have, and, you know, they had their run. Now they're doing something different.
Judd, how do you view players? Like, do you use more statistics? Or do you use more of your eyes to seek talent?
You know, it's like you know how bad I am with the stats. I mean, it's like I'm constantly working on databases, trying to study things, but ultimately it comes down to your eyes because what you see, because you can look and see on paper. That's why I love going to training camps, because when you go to training camps and, you know, you can only and you don't get a chance to go to the off-season programs and that, I mean, you have opinions, but you don't know if they're valid until you see them on the field. That's why ultimately your eyes can pick up and really be the ultimate determinator. Because I know, like, for example, and again, this is not because I'm trying to bash the Cleveland Browns. I went to Browns camp when they had 14 draft choices, and I'm looking, my eyes told me that they only had three players that are worth being any good, and ultimately that's what ends up happening. So, no, I love, but the eyes do tell you if you have at least some sense of what you're looking for as far as making a judgment on players.
Yeah, I would agree with you. If you look I like to look for consistency. If you think of Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Russell Wilson, their stat, you look, first you watch how they play, how they all find a way to win, and then if they're more consistent over the years, then you can start to look at the stats. But if you look at Cam Newton, he has one good year, and then he's off and on. Like, really, what do those stats show you?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. You know, stats are one thing, but again, stats can be skewed, particularly you get a veteran, because then you don't know what the team is around them. And so, you know, I think that your eyes are the ones that really get to determine what's good and what's not, and that's what you see on the field. That's why it's so valuable to watch the football games.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Tara, thank you very much, and have a great Memorial Day weekend. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's going to be kind of fun this weekend, because now you got the NBA with the final couple games there, and a lot of not necessarily drama in the games, but drama as far as the results, because now where everybody thought it was going to be Cleveland going against Golden State, now both teams have to try to fight to see if they can make it and if they are going to make it. So that's going to be kind of fun to watch. Also going to be kind of fun to see how it's going to be this weekend for the Mariners as they continue along 10 games above 500. You know, we know that things are popping in the NFL now that the OTAs are going on. So lots of good stuff to keep up on. And, of course, we'll keep you up to date on just about everything. And, of course, the Stanley Cup Finals are now out there. It's time to go for the Cup. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.